You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
What a month it has been. If June was as crazy for you as it has been for me, I have good news. June's done and we're officially in the second half of the year. But first, where are my manners? Hello, hello. Welcome to the pod. If this is you returning, I'm so glad to have you back. And if this is your first time, you've landed at what's probably our best lineup till date. Our top three stories for today. First up, Antonio Garcia Martinez, a name that you've probably heard for the last month and a half. I almost let that story slide when the employees of Apple went ahead and wrote yet another open letter, petition, call it what you want. For our second story, vaccinations, enough said. We're going to talk about organizations and what they can and cannot do in that regard. For our third and final story, the great resignations, three big words that are making rounds. Is it true? Is it here? We'll find out. But Bandits, the best part of the show, as always, is our guest for today, Shalini Pillai. I first met Shalini in 2016 when she was the head of People Performance and Culture at KPMG India. Shalini is now the India leader for Global Capability Centers. And now that's a transition worth being envious of. Shalini, welcome to the pod.
Thank you, Ankita. And hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. In fact, when Ankita first told me about what HR Bandits was all about, and as she's taken me through the potential themes, I have been excited. And it is fun to kind of talk about things that are, I must almost say, slightly controversial and yet quite important. So looking forward to this discussion today, Ankita. Thank you yet again.
Shalini, I'm so glad to have you here. Like, you were right on top when I was making my guest list for the year. But I want to know, how has June been for you? We are halfway into 2021. It's been a year and a half of us living like this and feels like a decade. I'm curious, did you pick up anything of what the people are calling lockdown hobbies or just a lockdown pet?
Well, first things first, I think June comes with a certain ray of optimism, I would say. With the pace at which we're seeing vaccinations progress, if not anything, and of course, while that virus out there could continue to morph into something new, I think there's a sense of safety that's beginning to set in. We have seen numbers come down dramatically. We have seen vaccination camps go up. And if not anything, one just feels a little more safe and secure. So there is certainly a degree of optimism that's setting in, and I'm hopeful. Though at another level, it still feels surreal that we've spent between March of last year and June in this work from home, lockdown, work from anywhere mode. So yes, mixed bag of feelings there, Ankita. But I must say, like with probably many others who've experienced it, the lockdown has had its pluses and its minuses. For me, the big plus really was being able to spend more time with myself. Honestly, haven't done that in a long, long time. I discovered a passion in painting and I actually took to that. And I cannot tell you how much I love it. I wait for my weekends to actually get out my paint brushes and paints. Haven't done that since school. So absolutely loving it. It's probably the most relaxing and most therapeutic thing I could do. I stay away, very far away from my laptop on Sundays, and that's my day for art. So I call it my artful weekends, and I'm just loving it.
I can imagine. I actually stalked your Instagram and saw these paintings, and I'm impressed. Like, here's what I'm going to do. Bandits, if you're listening, this is going to be your sneak peek into Shalini's artful weekends. I'm going to have the Instagram account linked in the show notes so that you can go and take a look. And I'm so glad to have this exclusive.
Oops, I'm going to caveat that this is just a novice. It's just a hobby, but I love it. And I've been enjoying upcycling and recycling stuff. And that gives me great joy. So whoever is going to actually go check it out, please keep that in mind.
Shalini, I actually tried, like, of the many skills that I tried picking up during the lockdown. Painting was one thing I dabbled in, and I was so horrified at the outcome that I haven't picked up the paintbrushes since December. But like, I took a look and I'm like, maybe I should get back to it. So like, if it's for inspiration, it definitely works.
Thank you.
But with that, I'm going to jump into our three stories. Before kicking it off, I want to know, Bandits, I know you're listening. What have you been up to in June and which stories captured your attention? I want you to join the conversation. Send a tweet my way with hashtag HRBandit. Tag me at Ankita Poddar or comment on LinkedIn. Per usual, all the links, LinkedIn, Twitter, the stories we're talking about, and especially Shalini's Instagram will all be mentioned in the show notes. With that, let's jump into our first two stories combined into one. Apple hired Antonio Garcia Martinez in April, who was then fired a month later when Apple was put under pressure from an employee petition making rounds. The petition demanded an investigation as to how Martinez was hired, despite being aware of the racist and sexist comments he made in his book, Chaos Monkey, published in 2016. Apparently, a lot of things happened in 2016. The petition received 2,000 signatures. I could go into depth, but I want to focus on my big question to Shalini with a quick reference to yet another open letter the employees drafted in response to Tim Cook's return to office plan. Shalini, I want to get your opinion on employee petitions and just how much attention they should be given. Like, should they be allowed to start making hiring and firing decisions for the organization?
Very interesting question, Ankita. And I think in the world that we're living in today, when you really look into what is the definition of a petition and what does it take for a group of employees to begin to express their view together and garner support for it, it takes very little. In today's social and media environment, one where we are all virtually connected and networks have been growing at a pace that you cannot imagine, it does not take much for a group of employees working for a common organization to come together and express their views. So really, what does it take to sign up and come together for signing a petition? Not much, very little. What kind of petitions could be out there? You've quoted a couple. There are quite a few more. If one looks and researches it, it doesn't take much for a group of employees to even sign up on a petition that may be on a very political agenda, where they expect an organization to express its views. So the limited point I'm making is it takes very little. What does the organization need to do and how does an organization react to these? Can you ignore it? I don't believe so. When you have a large number of your employees trying to convey something, you do need to take cognizance of that. But how do you react to it? I think that requires some thoughtfulness, some maturity, some looking into. You certainly don't go reacting to something impulsively. And I don't believe any of the organizations who have reacted to a petition would have done that. I would imagine there would be a due process followed and there would have been an inquiry to look into what and why they need to react to a petition and how should they be reacting. An organization or a business is there to run a business. There's a certain purpose it serves and a certain reason why it is in existence. As long as, and of course, it has a certain set of core values based on which that organization conducts its affairs. As long as everything is aligned to that and there is a business to be run, it is for the organization to take a call on how it may want to or choose to react to any such petition. I believe an organization needs to have the conviction, needs to have a narrative that actually it stands by. In today's day and age, most organizations have to think up a little ahead and have a narrative that actually thinks ahead of that curve. So I do believe that organizations need to really stick to that conviction, stick to its narrative and do what it needs to do that is right for its business. That doesn't mean you ignore the employee petitions. You take cognizance of it. You evaluate how you need to react to it because you cannot ignore these altogether either. But doesn't mean that you get swayed by what those large numbers are saying to you. So that's what I would say, Ankita. I think you need to kind of, the organization needs to maintain its conviction and stick to its own narrative.
I don't think petitions are going to go away anytime soon, especially now that employees realize that they can voice their opinion, potentially make a difference. What scares me is just petitions have this power to, like, the person who's drafting the petition can, you know, draft the narrative to go either ways that they want. So I'm very curious, like, if you had to give a recommendation to the person who's signing a petition, what would you say? Because I have signed petitions where I've just read what's on the petition, the information there. I don't always go into depth to say what's the history. I wouldn't have, in this case, I don't know how many people who sign actually read Chaos Monkey to figure out what it actually says.
Absolutely. And in fact, that's the scary part, right, Ankita? In today's social media world, there are things that could have been stated, and you also conscious of all of that is doing the round around fake news. There is stuff that gets pulled out of nowhere that could be completely miscontextualized, misquoted, morphed into a bunch of other things, and suddenly it's news. So I think one really has to be super careful about what is going out there. I think each of us, especially in the professional world, need to be so much more careful and so much more conscious about what we say. It's almost like you've got to watch out for what could be completely taken out of context. I'm not for a minute suggesting that was. I don't know enough details. I don't know the specific case on hand. But to your point, it is so easy. And when you speak of petitions getting signed, I mean, on WhatsApp, I get a whole bunch from my friends. Can you please sign this for me? And firstly, the minute you want to sign, you've got to be disclosing your email ID. Let me tell you, that itself is a huge risk. You don't know where that email ID is going. You don't know what someone doing with it. Some of these petitions can go on for pages, and then there's fine print in there. It's not uncommon that because you got it on a WhatsApp from a very dear friend who says, I want you to sign this, that you might actually just do it, completely leaning on what that friend is asking you to do. So it's quite real what you just quoted, and hence one has to be super careful. And I go back to what I said, it takes so little to actually get a petition, and you spoke of 2,000 people, that's actually nothing. It could take many, many, many more, and a very large percentage of whom would probably know very little about what they're signing. So there are all of these risks and threats in the world that we're living in. And hence, in my mind, are these petitions here to stay? I would say yes, very much so, and to grow. Because with awareness comes the power of employees reaching out using these platforms for all kinds of subjects and themes on which they want to express an opinion. Some of it could be very personal, but that comes out to an organization. So I really think the world is, in this virtual model, we all need to be really careful. I go back to saying that it takes very little to get these petitions out, and hence for one to really think it through carefully, not react to something without running a full process, without revisiting whether your the very purpose of your business is impacted by it, whether your narrative is getting misrepresented because of that petition from your employees. Run an investigative process before you really know what you're reacting to. But yes, you have to acknowledge that they are here, and there are going to be many more.
The thing you said about being careful about everything we say, I'm going to quote two lines from this article, and I will link it down below per usual. But it's like, it kind of makes me wonder about the world that we live in. So I'm going to quote that, and then we move on to a second topic. But this article says, it's no longer good enough to say the right things today. You have to make sure you didn't say the wrong things in the past. And if enough of your colleagues kick up a fuss, you'll get hung out to dry. And that makes me really, really scared.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Ankita. Absolutely.
So with that, our takeaway for Apple, you're going to have a lot of petitions. It's not going to stop. We just have to learn how to deal with them better. And for other organizations, well, it's a great case study for us to look into. Now for vaccinations. Oh, God, this has to be my favorite topic of today. My everyday morning ritual involves going into the website, seeing if I can finally register for a vaccine. And I'm hoping next week I can. But I want to ask, per usual, discussions on vaccine take up a big chunk of all social conversations. But what is organizations' involvement in this? Can organizations mandate that employees get vaccines, or can they even ask employees if they've been vaccinated?
A tricky one, Ankita, because this can very well be construed as going into something that's rather personal. Firstly, let's set a little context to this, right? I mean, I started off with saying I feel optimistic in June, and that's because I feel there's a safety net around all of us with the larger number of employees and people getting vaccinated. It just feels like the severity of this very virulent vaccine is probably coming under some control. So, vaccine, is it good? I certainly think so. Based on whatever one is reading in the medical journals today, it does seem like it's having that right effect in terms of reducing severity of the disease itself. So I believe it's a good thing to do. Can you force an employee to get vaccinated? I don't think you can, because you also, if you look at the same medical records, there, like any vaccine, there are those stray few cases, a very fraction of them, where there are adverse reactions, and you need to watch out for it. End of the day, if you look at an organization and the working model we are in today, which is this so-called virtual hybrid model, where large numbers of people are working from home, working remotely, working from wherever they are, and then there is a percentage that potentially needs to be in the office and in the office premises. We do believe, and I think we all agree, that we ain't going back to pre-COVID times. This virtual model, to some degree, is certainly going to continue. Right now, many of us are in complete lockdown. But as things ease up, we are going to get into some meaningful balance of a virtual hybrid, where depending on the business you're in, you will need some people coming into the office while others could work remotely. The minute you have that context and people are coming into office and they are going to be exposed. There is some exposure to the employees simply because you're going to be in the proximity of others as opposed to being in the safe walls of your own home. And hence, I think organizations can and will certainly encourage employees to get vaccinated, because with that exposure, and you need it. You need people to protect themselves, and hence a very strong encouragement to say, if you want to come into the office, into the work premises, we would strongly encourage you to get vaccinated. Depending on the nature of the work, Ankita, and I know some organizations have actually mandated it as well, to say, as long as you are working from home, we are okay. I mean, at one level, can the government mandate the vaccines beyond a point? I mean, it's something to think about, right? And we are only talking about individual organizations, so that's hard. As long as you're sitting in the confines of your own home, you're relatively safe. And I say relative because there too, we know people who stayed put at home and still got the virus. So it's hard. But the minute you're coming into office, because you're exposing yourself and your colleagues based on that proximity and that interaction, I think organizations will take different calls. Some might mandate it, some might actually very strongly encourage it. But to your point, legally, can we really mandate? I'm not so sure you can, because it is an employee's prerogative, given that you are talking about a medical treatment where you are actually going to get injected with the vaccine. So I personally, and I may be wrong, Ankita, I don't believe you can legally mandate it, though I know some organizations who've taken that call. But I think to really strongly encourage, create heightened awareness around the benefits of vaccination is probably the way to go. To try and discourage those who are not getting vaccinated to say, to not come into the office, to continue working from home. I think that's probably the way it will pan out.
So there are two scenarios that come to mind. One is, well, for most organizations, you do a medical checkup before we hire someone, right? And for whatever reason, can organizations say, we're doing a medical checkup, and one of the questions we ask is, are you vaccinated? And based on that, we do take hiring decisions. And that's, like, legally, you can't say, oh, I wasn't hired because I wasn't vaccinated. Like, organizations are not going to come out and say it. So that's scenario one. And the scenario two is, well, ideally, in a world, you could say, I'm not vaccinated. I'm not coming into an office. I'll continue working from home. But that's a luxury very few can afford. Like if you look at the manufacturing sectors or even the technology sectors, they are going to, like a lot of people are saying, you're going to have to come back to office at least 3 or 2 days a week. So they can't say, oh, I'm not vaccinated. You can't force me into the office. I'm not going to come. Like that's going to be an excuse that is probably not acceptable by organizations. So at the end of the day, I think while organizations may not mandate it, it's going to be very uncomfortable if you start having people who are not vaccinated coming into the office.
Yeah. So let me respond to your first question first. Well, we for sure at KPMG, we're not mandating a vaccination question at an interview stage. And I find that a little strange because you are going to hopefully continue to hire people for the right reasons, for the talent and for what they bring into the organization. I'm not sure and I'm not aware if people are actually questioning the vaccination and taking a hiring decision based on that. I somehow find that to be a bit of a stretch, Ankita, and I don't think it makes sense to me. I would imagine that your core reasons for hiring will continue. Of course, no doubt, through COVID, we have seen some very different competencies play up, and the competency matrices that you're using to hire have changed. So your competencies and the digital talent, and there are all of those, I don't want to get into it, but your reasons and what you're looking out for in employees has certainly gone through quite a sea change. But I don't believe that vaccination is a criteria for hiring. So forgive me if I'm wrong there and I don't know who's doing it. It could be a later stage where one is testing on that, but certainly not a hiring decision in my mind. The second point you made, which is around, I'm sorry, what was your second question?
The luxury of staying at home.
The luxury, not everyone can afford to actually work remotely and people will need to come into office. I agree. And which is why I said, given the exposure, that is where organizations where specifically who are in those roles will have to be super careful. Now, let me kind of raise another point here. We're talking about vaccinations. What is a vaccination? It is really just helping an individual protect and build a certain immunity to a virus. It is for an individual's well-being. Okay. What is it that an organization should actually be checking? And maybe the question should be, should an RT-PCR test be mandated? Because by getting vaccinated, if you go into office, what are you doing? You are actually protecting yourself. And that's why I use the word strong encouragement for vaccinations. But how do you protect your people? Because those who've got vaccinated have also caught COVID, right? I mean, that's possible. So what is it that the organization needs to be more resilient or build the layers of security around is to make sure that you're not bringing the infection into the office. So my question really would be, should you not be actually mandating tests to check who you're bringing into the office as opposed to the vaccinated crowd? So I'm kind of, I would turn that around to say, maybe what needs to get mandated is really some kind of a mandatory check. So, you know, all those coming into the office are safe. I mean, I'll give you an example just now, Ankita. I am working remotely from a location that's away from home. And I decided to work away because it's been 15, 16 months of lockdown. And before I lost sanity, decided to travel out of home base Bangalore to work on a workation, if I may call it that, to work elsewhere for 2 weeks. And one of the things that the hotel I'm staying at mandated was to see my RT-PCR test. They're not asking me my vaccination. Have you been vaccinated, ma'am? They want to know, are you currently COVID negative? And I must tell you, I felt a lot more reassured because their mandatory step is to make sure whoever walks into that hotel has an RT-PCR test done within a certain prescribed time frame. I now feel comfortable, not because I'm vaccinated, but because I know that those around me have been tested for COVID. And I think that could perhaps be more relevant than the mandatory vaccination approach. That's just my two bits, because vaccines and their efficacy will change depending on how this virus continues to morph. So you'd rather keep testing more regularly and more thoroughly than focusing on the vaccinations.
For the fear of drawing this topic out for too long, I have one opinion and one last question, and then we'll move on to the last piece. But my thing is just maybe it's more expensive for the organization to mandate tests because the employees, I'm guessing the organization will pay for it in this case and not the employees, because I don't think, for example, KPMG can say you pay for a PCR test and then show it to us before we let you into an office. So maybe that's why they're focusing on vaccination. And my question for you is, there's this idea floating around where organizations, actually countries and counties, are doing this. Like, you come get vaccinated and we give you a beer. We pay you XYZ. Should that, I know countries are doing it, counties are doing it. Should organizations do something like this?
Well, there's so much happening there, right? I mean, sometimes when I look at what's going on WhatsApp, it's crazy. And of course, that's representative of what's happening outside. The ones I like the best were not the come get a beer or whatever, but come get vaccinated and donate a vaccination. I love that drive. Get yourself vaccinated and donate one to someone else who needs it, but perhaps can't afford it. So I do believe that that brought in a lot of people. People love that initiative because it actually gets you to help in a certain way. And there's really a level of seriousness around the risk we're all exposed to. And to your other comment, Ankita, I would just say that with technology and with more research, there have been some really very promising newer tests that are emerging. And I do believe the cost of testing will go down quite significantly. I think this virus is not entirely disappearing as we speak. I know you probably seen a few messages today about the so-called third wave. Not going in a hurry. I think we need to kind of hope and believe that with research, the cost of testing is also going down quite rapidly.
Your recommendations on get a vaccine and give a vaccine campaign is probably the best thing that I've heard this month so far. So with that, I'm going to move on to our third and final story for today.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline E-Systems Limited.
I recently received an email from LinkedIn and it was titled, Ankita, is the Great Resignation here? Now, the email encouraged me to share my opinions on the theme and post using hashtag the big shift. So big shout out to LinkedIn series. I love them. And I'm extremely flattered that I received that email. They've likely sent it to everyone. I'm going to live in denial just a little bit longer and I'm curating content for that article. So Shalini, this is where you become like a contributor to my article to emerge. So here's what they're saying the Great Resignation is. Many people are thinking of shaking up their careers as restrictions are lifted and economies improve. Resignations between August 2019 and August 2020, except for those ages 20 to 25, who saw a 20.3% decrease, employ from ages 30 to 35 was 21.5%, 35 to 40, 19.6%, 40 to 45, 25.1% saw large increases in resignation, signaling that workers more established in their careers have continued to shift jobs. I know there were a lot of numbers in there, but the theme being, if you're 30 plus, you're likely going to switch. Now, to add that, and I'm going to put this last piece and throw the question back at you. I recently read a Fast Company article that called this phase entering into the sixth stage of depression, where people are reevaluating life choices. And our biggest life choice is probably our career. So the world is changing, but I'm still on the fence about this wave being titled the Great Resignation. Now, if it's great because of the numbers, then I'm not as convinced. But if it is great because of the underlying reasons that actually signals in a shift that the way we do work, I do think that is great. Do you agree?
I'm thinking of going full-time into painting, Ankita.
There, we have your second career right there.
just kidding. But on a serious note, you speak of the Great Resignation. I think COVID-19 has been one of the greatest disruptors. What's been at the core of it is technology that has truly disrupted our way of working. I mean, and we ain't going back to anything like what it was pre-COVID. So what has changed around us? Organizations have changed their operating models. Technology at the core has changed everything across the business value chain. We're all here to do more with less in terms of what technology allows us. Infrastructure has changed. Our way of working in the workspace as we define it has changed. the way in which you interact and you collaborate and you partner has changed. At the core, organizations have been forced to change their products and services and propositions to the customer. You and me as customers, our preferences and our buying behaviors have changed. So what has not changed? If you think about it, the world around us has changed since March of last year or since COVID-19 hit us. And in all of this, I do believe if organizations haven't changed, whether it is their purpose, their model, their vision, their way of working, then you should certainly be prepared for the great resignation, because employees aren't going to hang around to continue to be part of your organization if you haven't changed and realigned and tweaked your way of working to what that world of tomorrow is. So I do believe that, yes, we are all got so many more choices. We've all have the ability to be a lot more agile and nimble compared to ever before. So given those choices, given preferences, you will see employees express themselves, going back to whether on the back of a petition or whether it is simply chatting with your performance manager. We all want to exercise those options and work with the kind of agility that we want to. We want, and this has actually allowed a much spoken about topic for the last decade has been the work-life balance. What has this done to it? I mean, honestly, it gives you at one hand a lot more time to do stuff, whereas I know there's an equally large pool that talks of the burnout with COVID. But end of the day, I think as human beings, we all can bring in more discipline, do so much more remotely, do exercise the options and actually achieve a better balance. So when you look at all of that, given the options that employees have, if the organization hasn't realigned to those options, you will certainly see resignations. So in my mind, it's all about what kind of agility and nimbleness is the organization providing to its people. If you have kept pace with times and if you are gearing yourself up for the future of work, then it's not something you need to fear about, because organizations and people will see that and people will get the flexibility and the agility that they want. But if you have continued to stay stagnant and not rewired and remodeled yourself, then yes, be prepared for the great resignation, because it will certainly come your way.
My last yes or no question. I have a feeling 2020, like as compared to 2020, we'll of course see a great resignation, because not a lot of people were moving around that year. Like if you had a job, you were like, okay, let me keep it. Let me see what's going to happen. And then when things stabilize, and hence we're seeing the mass exodus in 2021. Agree, disagree?
I'm not sure it's mass. I'm sorry, but I would say agree if your organization hasn't changed or hasn't adapted. So I'm sorry, but I cannot say the yes without caveating that, because it's true. And I completely believe that, to say yes if you've not adapted to the new world.
Perfect. That was a trick question, Shalini. You got on to me on that. With that, folks, we have our three big stories for the month. Employee petitions are here to stay. They're not going to go away. We just need to deal with them better. Vaccinations, well, we can't legally mandate them, but we have a great campaign idea that Shalini shared. And lastly, the great resignation. Well, it all depends on whether the organization adapted or not. Shalini, it was great having you with us today. I rambled on more than I've ever done before. I almost didn't want to let you go, but any closing words?
Now, this was fun, Ankita. Thank you so much. I think I love the name, the HR Bandits caption, and it's quite true to that, because and they have a fearless you to ask questions that are certainly not the easiest to answer. But it was an absolute pleasure being here and chatting with you. Thank you again, and look forward to connecting with you sometime soon.
Absolutely, Shalini. We'd love to have you back. And everyone, thank you for listening in. I will see you in our next episode. Until then, don't forget to ask your HR team if they've tuned into HR Bandit. And I hope you followed Done Everything One Does with podcast. And on behalf of Shalini, myself, and everyone at NHRDN, we are out.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.